So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Meine Lieblinge, Wildlachs in Scheiben, je 80 Gramm Packung oder Lachs in Scheiben, je 100 Gramm Packung, nur 3,29 Euro. Oder Le Rustique Camembert, französischer Weichkäse, je 250 Gramm Packung, nur 2,79 Euro. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today is Nadia Oxford, my lovely co-host.
Hello.
Hello.
And as usual, we will be talking about RPGs, big and small, Western and Eastern, because they are the only thing that can dull the pain and the existential terror that we are currently going through in the wake of the rather shocking result from last night.
Yes, I need all the RPGs and some soup.
Yes, I promise. We're going to talk about the fun stuff today, because what are video games if not escapism?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're not going to dwell too much on this election, don't worry. But suffice it to say, I came very close to being like, you know what? I don't really feel like doing the podcast this week. I don't really feel like talking about video games. But, you know, sometimes you just need video games to be like, you know, this is a world that I can escape into for a few hours at least.
So. I agree, 100%. And like I was saying to Kat, maybe it's a little bit of ego, but I like to think that we can be there to, you know, help you guys if you need it to, and just kind of talk and let you escape for a little while.
And amusingly enough, we'll be talking about a game called Tyranny today.
The fates align.
We'll be imagining RPGs from the point of view of the villain.
Mm, and we swear to God, this was not planned. This was all planned beforehand.
This is all so topical. I don't know. We will be talking about Mass Effect Andromeda and the large number of new information that recently dropped. And hopefully we'll have time to get to an RPG pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Finally.
Yes.
We're going to do this.
We made all this noise
about
wanting
them. We got
it
all lined up. All right, so let's do this, Nadia. Mass Effect Andromeda. Tons of new information mm-hmm. just came in. So a few things that we know about the upcoming game. First thing we know is that you will be playing as one of the Ryder twins, either a lady or a guy, Scott or Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And that you will have a dad named Alec Ryder, because all video games have to have dads now, because all the game developers are growing up and having kids, and
you see,
like, I identify with the dads now.
I'm okay with this, but I think we should. Square Enix needs to go back in time and kind of retroactively include their dads. Like, I want to see a game with Laguna in it.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
I love Laguna. Yeah.
So I am pro-dad, but it has to be, like, we have to acknowledge the dads who have come before.
Yes, we do. Yes. Well, oh man, who are the best video game dads?
That's gonna be a great topic.
Because Laguna was pretty absent in Final Fantasy VIII. Like, we didn't really see him very much.
Yeah.
You know, like, and a lot of these heroes in games have always kind of had like a Peter Pan syndrome. Like, their family dies,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, they're orphans or whatever. So maybe this is a relatively new phenomenon, or you just don't see their families, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who is the main hero of Final Fantasy VI? Essentially an orphan,
mm-hmm.
Who has a family of her choosing. You rarely see the parents. If you have a mother, like, she's just the NPC who helps you out sometimes.
Yeah, and in Earthbound, dad is a phone. Yeah, literal, actual phone.
In Pokemon, you never see your dad, except in Ruby and Sapphire, where the dad is the gym
leader.
That's
right, he's the gym leader. I really like that. I thought that was really cool.
That you have to fight. But beyond that, like, beyond Norman, I mean, it was always a running joke in Pokemon that Ash was like, where's my dad?
Yeah.
What's going on? Aside from your father, Alec Ryder, you have Liam, who is a human squad mate, an ex-cop. And you have PB, who is an Asari. And apparently there will be a new species called the Ket, who will be more of an antagonistic role. You're going to be traveling in the Andromeda Galaxy. It's kind of like, have you ever watched Macross, Nadia?
I have not. Well, I think I've dabbled in it, because I've It's at the back of my mind for some reason, but no, I probably don't know it nearly as well as you do.
One of the key kind of universal plot points is that at the end of the original Macross, all of these large self-contained colony ships called like Mega Roads, mm-hmm. Go out into the universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And are trying to seed humans throughout the galaxy, because that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's worked really well for us down here on Earth, guys.
And you get to see their different stories. And of course, there are always idols involved because power of music, love and peace, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I bring this up is because the Mass Effect Andromeda idea is kind of similar. Like, we're going out into the universe, we're trying to seed humanity, we're exploring. And on the one hand, that's like a really cool idea, but it's also kind of like reminiscent of what I was seeing in Macross.
So. Yeah, that's kind of neat, though. I mean, humans, we're kind of screwed up. We're endlessly fascinating creatures. And again, that's ego speaking, but I think we're kind of neat, even when we're assholes.
Oh, I like to believe that. I like to have faith in my fellow humans, but
me
I'm not
too.
Feeling it right now.
I understand.
I'm sorry. I keep doing this. Oh, my God. Let's keep talking about RPGs. So I like that they are getting away from kind of the established galaxy of Mass Effect,
because mm-hmm.
like that was one of the things about Mass Effect was that you walked into this world where like there was an alien console, you were going to like these big established places like the Citadel, there were these ancient gates that you didn't really understand what they were there for, and actually I loved the twist at the end of the original Mass Effect. And I won't spoil it if you haven't played the original, but mm-hmm. the original Mass Effect just had the best twist in regards to those. It was strong stuff. So, but it's good to get away from that and kind of establish a kind of a new setting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, I'm always kind of sad to leave behind an old universe, but oftentimes just going into a new one, like you have to just kind of making that break. Makes it so easy to appreciate the game that comes next. So, in other words, it's a hard break, but it's usually worth it in the end.
Well, you know, after a trilogy
exactly.
of Mass Effect, I think that if they had just picked up with Mass Effect 4 and put it back in the same galaxy, I think it would have been kind of stale.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's like, oh, and now we've got the Riders, and Alec Rider is an N7 agent, just like Shepard was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, yeah, okay. And who are the big bad guys who are coming in, extragalactic threats that are coming in this time?
Yeah.
So, the fact that it's going into the Andromeda Galaxy just gives it a different flavor, and I'm immediately in favor of that.
Yeah, I'm pretty okay with that myself.
So apparently romance options won't be limited by the gender of your character, which is nice,
yeah,
because
nice.
In the original Mass Effect, that was always kind of a thing. They like made a big deal about the fact that you could have a quote-unquote lesbian relationship with the Asari who don't have gender.
Yeah.
Which always, on the one hand, I always thought it was kind of neat that the Asari don't have gender.
Yeah, that's nice.
But on the other hand, like, it was a tiny bit of a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, it's been, at this point, it's been almost 10 years since the original Mass Effect, which is terrifying to contemplate.
Oh, geez.
And I like to think that things have advanced at least a little bit in how we view gay relationships and video games and that kind of thing. So
I agree.
It's been kind of normalized. So
I think the important question here, though, is can I marry a Krogan?
I don't think there will be Krogans in this game. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like we're going to get an Asari,
uh-huh.
and then we're going to get a bunch of new characters, but we're not going to see some of the familiar races, which is too bad, because I love the Krogans. They were easily my favorite race in Mass Effect.
Yeah, I'm just going to turn around and kick at a rock right now. Kick it down the lane.
Who was Gareth? What was his name? The Geth? Not the Geth. So the Geth were the robots.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had the lady, the girl with the mask. I forget what they were called. But there was the other guy who was like an ex-cop himself. And I forget who he was. But I always found him pretty cool. Garrus.
Yes. Okay, I have a bunch of friends who have a huge crush on him. He's all right.
Yeah, he was all right. I tried to date him a little bit at Mass Effect 2, but he was kind of rejecting my Shepard's advances. And then I just went back to my relationship with Liara, because I was like, I like you, Liara. It's cool. when we were going to go fight the Shadow Broker, I was like, oh yeah, like Liara and I were like walking with purpose to go fight the Shadow Broker. I'm like,
striding right, together.
Yeah, Liara, this is great. This is a real relationship now.
Let's do this thing.
Yeah, exactly. So apparently character classes are going to be different. You won't pick one, but you'll fall into one as you build your skill tree, which I think is a pretty good idea. And it's actually a pretty, it's becoming a common trend in RPGs where we're moving away from these kind of restrictive classes and allowing people to just kind of organically develop toward one, to whatever they want to do.
So it's a little bit like Skyrim in that regard.
Yeah, but I think the downside of that is that you can build, it's a lot easier to build super characters.
Yeah.
And you can't have defined, I think it's a lot easier to min-max. You can't as easily have defined strengths and weaknesses in your design. And I think in general, forgive me for using this word, I think it's a more, more flexibility isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it does feel like it's designed to cater to more casual fans who don't want to put a lot of thought into maximizing their particular class. And I think that, I mean, we'll see, but it seems like a recipe for something that is as brokenly powerful as Skyrim.
Yeah, but I don't mind that so much. I am going to be a god.
And you know, Mass Effect was never exactly known for its mechanical death, even in the original Mass Effect.
Pretty much.
So apparently Paragon and Renegade are gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that'll take some getting used to, I guess.
Well, Bob was saying, I remember when we had Bob on here, he was saying that kind of the good evil meters were kind of a thing of the last generation, and developers have really moved away from that.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
Pardon me?
Why do you think that is?
Why have we moved away from that?
Yeah.
A little too black and white, I guess. There's a vine by, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's this like cute little kid who does these vines related to video games, and he has one like, you know, playing a BioWare game. And he presses the button for hello, and it says, the character says, hello, fucker, I'm going to kill your family. And he's like, what the hell? I didn't do this. So
it takes away kind of the actual role-playing, and it creates a character that you're like, what? I don't want to be like that. I want some nuance.
Yeah, exactly, because let's face it, people are nuanced for the most part. When they make choices, even if they seem like bad choices, they usually have reasons.
I can think of some people who are not nuanced in the least.
That too. Again, that is basically a philosophy about people I like to keep in my heart, but it's not always true. But at the same time, it's nice to see nuance in video games.
I would argue that Paragon and Renegade never worked all that well because, first of all, if you played Mass Effect all the way through, you were punished dramatically for Renegade choices. Like, Renegade was not... It was not a viable path if you wanted a good ending.
Right.
Which was kind of a drag, you know?
Yeah. And that's always been a flaw for a lot of video games, where if you choose the bad path, well, you're going to have a bad time, to quote Sans.
And not only that, it was always a little bit too restrictive and also just really gamey, right?
Like
it just really mechanical in its implementation. And I think people are looking for something a little more organic that is more reflective of their actual stance. And you can get, you said it was a little too black and white. We can get more of those shades of gray.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
And apparently there will be dialogue options with different tones. So we'll see how that impacts everything. If you take a more, like a much harsher tone or a more conciliatory tone or whatever. You can reallocate skill points to change up your specializations. So if you get bored with one specialization, that'll be nice. Which is good because I remember picking, I forget which class I picked in the original Mass Effect, and I did not like that class. But you're pretty much stuck with that class for the entire game. I had a lot of success with being a sniper, especially once I leveled up my gun a little bit and figured out how to steady my hand. Oh my god, the shooting in that game was so bad. Did you play the original Mass Effect?
I have not.
Really? Did you play Mass Effect 2?
No, I have not.
Oh, Mass Effect 2 is really good.
I've actually, I've talked in the past about how much I love Star Control 2, so like I really need to play Mass Effect. But I'll be honest, P-
two totally different games.
I know, but just like the themes are supposedly very similar. But I've also had people intimidate the hell out of me by saying, oh, if you don't play Mass Effect 1, don't bother with 2. So I'm just like, like, where do I start?
You know, if you pick up the... Well, if you pick up any version of Mass Effect 2, you can actually get you can download as a piece of DLC the story experience that lets you make all of the choices from the original Mass Effect.
Yeah, and that's what I've heard. And that sounds like a very good idea, but then people tell me, oh, it's not the same. So
it's not, but the original Mass Effect, I don't think it holds up extremely well. I suppose if you play it on PC, it's not as bad.
Yeah.
It's certainly... certainly really aged on the 360.
That's what I've heard.
And the PS3. Like, they really... The implementation of the Unreal Engine back then was really not super great.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 2 was a lot of fun. Like, it... I really enjoyed the kind of Dirty Dozen kind of feel toward it. I liked the way that it built on the decisions from the first game. I liked the way my character kind of evolved. Like, when I was a hardcore renegade in the original Mass Effect, but my character, I kind of role played my character as starting to regret her choices by Mass Effect 2.
Right.
And like going much more Paragon, which was satisfying to me. And the suicide mission at the end is just fantastic. Mm-hmm. It is just such a great culmination of everything that comes before it.
And then there's 3.
That's leading up to that point.
Yeah, Mass Effect is one of those games where, even though I haven't played it, I'm fairly familiar with the lore and whatnot, because it seems like such an interesting universe.
It's okay. I think that it borrows pretty heavily from established sci-fi tropes, particularly the Cthulhu-like Reapers, the extragalactic menace who are beyond all comprehension and all that stuff.
Yeah, but if it wasn't for Lovecraft, there wouldn't be any sci-fi whatsoever. Everyone just rips off from him.
I've often said that Mass Effect is basically Babylon 5, but not subversive at all.
Yeah.
Because one of the things about Babylon 5 is that it introduces this extragalactic, well, not extragalactic, this ancient threat, kind of like, almost like Lord of the Rings, kind of like darkness. And eventually you realize that it's like, oh, okay, well, they're not necessarily the quote-unquote bad guys. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot more to this story than just, we must all rally together to fight the evil darkness that wants to destroy all life.
Yeah. And again, going back to Star Control 2, that was very much the same thing. So everyone's just kind of borrowing from each other, let's say.
Yes, there is not an original idea in video games.
Nothing's new under the sun.
But I do encourage you to play Mass Effect 2. Mass Effect 3 is kind of more of the same. Mm-hmm. It bored the crap out of me.
Yeah, Mass Effect 3, like, I hear so many people speak very highly of it, but then when they get to 3, it's kind of like, it's all right.
Yeah, I find the original Mass Effect trilogy to be pretty flawed, to be honest. I had a lot of good ideas, but I think Mass Effect 2 was the best of them. And even then, it just streamlined the hell out of all of the good ideas from the original. You know, there's one thing about the original that they took out in 2 and I always really hated, was the seamlessness of losing your ship when you went on a planet.
Right.
Because when they took that away and just made it a loading screen, like, I lost the sense that I was actually in a spaceship.
Yeah.
I lost that kind of sense of immersion, and it became a lot more artificial to me.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah, it was a drag, let's say. But, oh, and Mass Effect 2 has the best DLC as well. But I digress. If you haven't played the original Mass Effect, I have a friend and former guest in this podcast, Rowan Kaiser, who is of the opinion that Mass Effect is like one of the 10 most important games of the past, like, 15 years or whatever. I strongly disagree with him on that front, actually. I think Mass Effect was fine, but I think its influence is actually pretty limited in the grand scheme of things, and that it was a deeply, deeply flawed series. But it, like I said, it certainly has a following, and it's not without merit.
Yeah, I have many, many friends who think very, very highly of 2, at least.
But yeah, so yeah, I think that what I know so far of Mass Effect Andromeda certainly has me interested. especially if they open it up a lot and let me go to a lot of interesting worlds, as it seems to be implying when they say that you can go to these worlds and fight like optional bosses mm-hmm. and do side quests and stuff. Mm-hmm. And since you didn't play Mass Effect 2, you probably don't know what loyalty missions are. Like, the loyalty missions were, you would essentially do a character-specific side quest,
mm-hmm.
and that would tell you, like, kind of their background.
Right.
Some of them are better than others.
Right.
And if you beat that loyalty mission, you would get, like, an armor upgrade, and they would become more loyal to you.
Right.
And... spoiler alert, if you don't do them in Mass Effect 2, they're probably going to die.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
So you really want to do all of the loyalty missions.
Yeah.
Don't skimp on the loyalty missions.
I'm usually pretty good about doing like side quests and whatnot, so we'll be okay.
I always thought it was funny that in Mass Effect 2, if you do everything wrong in the final mission, it is theoretically possible to have an ending where everybody dies.
Aww.
Including Shepard.
Aww.
And it becomes like the ending. Like, that is the worst possible ending that you can get.
Bad ending. This is bad end.
You have to kind of work hard for that one, though.
You have to be a real jerk.
Yeah. So, Mass Effect Andromeda, I like to believe that BioWare has learned some of its lessons from the mistakes made with Mass Effect 3, and I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I would put my excitement / interest at this at about like a 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I will be way more excited when, say, Elder Scrolls 6 gets announced, but I'm sure I'll buy it day one. What about you?
I'll guess I give as good an excuse as any to give 2 a try. So if I like that, sure.
I mean, I think Mass Effect Andromeda is just a whole new thing, so you can probably pick up the series with Andromeda, and if it really appeals to you, then you can pick up. You can pick up 2.
That's true. That's a good point. This is like a whole new start. So if I'm really into what I play, then go backwards.
Indeed. Speaking of fresh starts, let's talk about Tyranny,
mm-hmm.
which coverage started to go up on Thursday. This is a new RPG by Obsidian. Obsidian recently got back into isometric RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
Their most recent game was Pillars of Eternity, which had a very different feel to it than Tyranny did. Pillars of Eternity was more mysterious, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You had like these dark forces that were operating throughout history. You were fighting kind of like evil,
right?
Like pure evil. And you had a variety of some pretty interesting characters. Like, you had a mad prophet with you. It was a pretty dark world in a lot of respects. And you were very much on your own as you went through it. Tyranny is very different.
It is. I didn't get to play Pillars of Eternity, but from what you describe, yeah, Tyranny is very different.
Yeah, so in Tyranny, you are the agent of this Genghis Khan-like figure, or maybe Julius Caesar-like figure.
Mm-hmm.
Who is conquering the known worlds.
Yeah.
And when the game picks up, you are helping two of his armies, the Disfavored, who are kind of their elite shock troops,
mm-hmm.
and the Scarlet Chorus, who are like, you know, the Joker.
Yeah.
in helping to subdue this last region. And much like I mentioned Mass Effect earlier, like how you could do this kind of story experience where you will make all the decisions in an emotion comic.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar,
yeah.
actually, to how they start Tyranny. So you get, you know, you see a map and you see like these little like chess pieces come down and you can choose which one you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that you go to is like defines the decisions that you have to make.
Right.
And pretty early on, you find out that there's no way that the Disfavored and the Scarlet Chorus hate each other.
Yeah.
And there's no way to square that circle. There's just no way to make them both happy.
No,
you're
going
to have to pick one.
There is no middle ground. You choose a side, essentially.
No, there's just no way to make everybody happy. Like, people are going to become mad at you. And so I discovered that in kind of the harshest terms possible when we were fighting to conquer this this temple, mm-hmm. like this haven for magic users.
Right.
And as a magic user myself, I was like, lots of good loot. Yeah, let's do this thing, right? And I made a decision to save these books, which were apparently against the law of Curios. Mm-hmm. And the disfavored responded by leaving in a huff.
Here's this mighty conquering army just leaving in a huff, like, oh, I can't believe what you've done here.
Which meant I didn't have the numbers to conquer this temple.
Oh, dear.
So you know what Curios did?
What?
He nuked it.
That sounds like something he would do, going by what the whole plot of the game is, which is there is a rebellion, and if you don't quell this rebellion, everybody dies.
Yeah.
He's just going to salt that bit of earth. He doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. He issues these edicts, and it's like, if you do not follow this edict, sorry, you die.
Yes.
Everybody dies. All of the people die, so you better fulfill your mission.
Yeah, that's a hell of a motivator.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I felt a little dumb for trying to be so conciliatory and also trying to protect all the things, because in saving some tomes, I accidentally got the entire damn library nuked, which was a little embarrassing.
Whoopsie, my bad.
How about you, Nadia? What did you experience?
I didn't have anything quite as earth-shattering as that. I basically favored the disfavored, if you will.
So yeah, that's, you can't do that. They're disfavored for a reason.
Well, I sided with them for most of their decisions, and I came out okay in the end. We had this conflict with this, I forget what the name of the judges are who work under Kairos, but one of them went rogue, and since he was a huge giant, basically stopping him turned out to be a real task. So it came down to, okay, am I going to throw the Scarlet course against this big monster, or am I going to, like, throw the elite disfavored against him? And I'm like, you know what? The Scarlet Course guys, you guys have the Adventures of Numbers, so you go do that thing over there. And the Dishonored were, the Disfavored were quite happy with that decision. He was stopped, and there was a big earthquake, and there was a lot of damage done, but, you know, at least most of us survived.
Well, that's good.
There were no libraries nuked, at least.
That's one of the big things about tyranny, actually, is that you have these areas that can be changed dramatically or be very different depending on the decisions that you end up making.
Yes.
Hence the nuked library.
And the shattered earth.
Yes, exactly. Like, so kind of a cool idea there by Obsidian, I think. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, did the game start for you with a rebellion that you had to stop?
Yes. Did you not get the same scenario?
Yeah, I got the same scenario. Okay. Where, like, it opens with the skull and, like, the fire is, like, the lava's pouring out or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the blood water, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it was, like, blood water.
There was blood involved, and it was coming out of someone's eyes, so.
And you had to conquer this village that was full of rebels.
Yes.
And the Disfavored and the Scarlet Chorus are working with you, and it picks up and comments on a lot of the decisions that you make.
Yes.
And you kind of build your reputation in this early act. And so characters for me, like, because I was always trying to strike bargains, like, my character was a diplomat, mm-hmm. a diplomat spellcaster. So I was always trying to, like, negotiate truces, and, like, because the Scarlet Chorus was always wanting to integrate people into their ranks rather than kill them outright, like the Disfavored, I always went with the Scarlet Chorus, mm-hmm. which is why the Disfavored didn't really like me. The Disfavored just wanted to kill everybody and salt the earth.
Yeah, basically. The Disfavored are mostly interested in, like, elite warriors, whereas the Scarlet Chorus, they'll recruit anyone to bolster their numbers.
Pretty much. They're like the Zerg.
Yes.
And their leader is like the Joker. He is like this kind of demonic character with like fire coming out of like
everything.
Various everything. And he's like comically evil, like mustache twirling evil.
I actually saw him referenced in the lore, but I didn't actually get to meet him.
Yeah, you meet him in the tent.
Oh, okay.
You see him arguing with the Disfavored general, and all they do is freaking argue.
Of course.
Until things come to a head a little bit. Mm-hmm. And You pick up a party pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, you pick up a guy who has like all of his armor fused to him.
Cool.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. He seems like a nice guy.
How does he pee?
It doesn't really explain to that one.
Come on, video game, step it up.
He like is sided with the disfavored. But then you also have a lady that you meet like really early on who's like kind of a crazy warrior, and she works for the Scarlet Chorus. Mm-hmm. So the guy with the armor fused to him is a tank, and she is not an offensive tank. She's like pure DPS. Like she goes in and she can like shoot fire arrows, but she can also like slash and burn with like dual wielding daggers mm-hmm. and stuff. So she's pretty good. And the trouble is, depending on your decisions, you can piss off some of your party members so much that they'll just quit.
I am outie.
Which is what happened to me with the guy in the armor.
Oh,
actually.
Really?
Yeah. I pissed off the disfavored so much that he was just like, nope, can't trust you. You're crazy. I don't like you. I'm out of here.
Wow.
And I actually said, I'm going to issue an edict that binds you to my side. You have to follow me.
Wow.
And he was like, I don't like you. And I'm like, I don't like you either.
I don't care.
But then I reloaded and I was a little nicer to him. And it pretty quickly came out that he had a big crush on the lady from the Scarlet Chorus.
Aww.
Who was also in my party. I was like, oh, it's so sweet.
That's very nice.
I don't know how you already have a crush on her, given that you've known her for all of like 2 days.
It's been a long
but
2 days.
Whatevs. I also managed to save this crazy old sage who was like tied up to a post and like on the verge of being executed.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be really careful. Like if you are just toss away characters, you're potentially throwing away playable characters in this game.
Right.
So I got a party, and then my character like mostly uses ice spells. Like I've managed to unlock kind of range spells and stuff. Have you tried the spell creation stuff yet?
No, as I described in an earlier episode, I am just not a spellcaster. I actually went for the hunter character, kind of a more thief sort of build. I think I have a little bit of magic, but I haven't done any sort of magic crafting.
I'm not normally a spellcaster either. I tend to find spellcasting a little boring,
mm-hmm.
but I really wanted to go for something different in this one. So I created a spellcaster, and I have frost magic and like buff magic so that I can buff up my party.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things early on that happens is that you get access to these ruins, and basically you combine them to create magic. So you have like a distance ruin and a close range ruin. And then on the other side, you have like the vitality ruin, the frost magic ruin, and, you know, something else. And then you can further augment them with like elemental ruins or more powerful mm-hmm. ruins to create even more powerful spells, but they're like one use.
Right.
So you kind of got to be careful with how you use them. Kind of an interesting system.
Yeah, that does sound pretty fun. And saying that as someone who's really not interested in magic spells, but I do like the idea of like kind of having more control over what your spells can do.
Right. The basic spells, once you get ruins, you can craft them anytime you want and just attach them to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's the augmentation effects that you have to be a little careful with.
Right.
Because that's only a one-off kind of thing. So, and then you also have kind of a limited space for being able to actually attach these spells to your character.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think pretty hard about which spells you actually want to power yourself up with. And I actually really regret taking these stealth spells for my character, because I assumed that I would want to be able to escape on a moment's notice if I was getting targeted
mm-hmm.
and then like reoriented myself and just keep hitting them from a distance. The problem is that the stealth spells take way too long to cast.
Yeah, yeah. I think I actually have a stealth spell because I'm a hunter, but I noticed some spells take longer to cast than others.
The hunters are pretty powerful in this one, right? Like, seems like the bow attacks are quite good.
Yeah, I got a bow attack as my primary attack and a javelin as my secondary attack. And I'm just kind of standing back while my other characters, like, you know, get hit in the face. And I'm just like, do-do-do, plink, plink, plink.
Feels like ranged attacks are really, really good, actually.
Yeah, I'm always good with ranged attacks.
Assuming that they don't get through your meat shield to come and get you.
Yeah.
Because if they do that, you're kind of screwed.
You have a problem.
Yeah, you really do. I... Luckily, the meat shield, the used armor guy, is like super strong.
Well, he's made of armor. He'd better
be. He is, in fact, made of armor. And I was having a lot of luck. Just, I would, when people were coming at me, I would have Scarlet Chorus Girl shoot a burning arrow to start one of them on fire, which would freeze them.
Right.
As they were going,
running around screaming.
I would have him taunt another so that they would come after him and engage him. And I would have my main character use a ranged frost spell to freeze others. And I was able to kind of carve through the enemy party like a hot knife through butter.
Nice.
And I had a sage who would also periodically heal me. Like, I felt pretty powerful, like almost right from the outset.
Right.
Which is nice. I think that was also the case with Pillars of Eternity. Almost right from the start, you have tiered spells that are pretty strong. So here's the difference between Tyranny and Pillars of Eternity. Pillars of Eternity was a much stricter Dungeons and Dragons kind of system.
Yes, it was.
Where you had encounter powers and you had powers that you could only use like a couple times per rest. And you had powers that had traditional cooldown, and you had to be very judicious with how you use them.
Right.
Like if you were in a particular battle, like it would make you save certain powers for like boss battles and that kind of stuff. And I'll be honest, I prefer that.
Right.
I see a lot of developers, a lot of designers now saying, oh, well, we want people to actually use the powers that they have, even in regular battles, because they're saving them too much. But I would actually say that it adds to the... when you're fighting a boss battle, you want to feel like you have that extra reserve of power to start bringing out.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm the kind of person who's really paranoid about using that kind of power ever, even against bosses. I'm the very much the person who has like those 50 ethers at the end of the game that they never used.
Right, because you're always like, oh my god, this is way too hard to get.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, boss battle, I should use one now. But what if I come up against a harder boss? So, and at the end of the game, it's like, oh, I can make a house out of these.
But, I mean, like, you could always just go to a campsite and recover all of your stuff away.
That's true.
It's just resource management, right?
Yeah.
Like making sure that you properly use all of your resources and don't just go, well, I'm going to dump everything into this little goblin guy. And he's going to be like a pile of ash when I'm done, but I'm not going to have any charges left. So, but with Tyranny, there are encounter powers, that powers that can only be used a couple times per encounter. But there don't seem to be powers for rest, unless I haven't hit the much higher tier powers yet.
Yeah, that's also very possible. I mean, how far have you played into the game?
Oh, I haven't played like a few hours.
Yeah, so who knows at this point?
Yeah, exactly. But it's a lot more focused on cooldowns and that kind of thing.
Right.
And not only that, but like in Pillars of Eternity, you get 6 characters. Per party, and in this one you only get 4.
Yeah.
Not sure how I feel about that still.
I guess if you have like more free reign with your powers in Tyranny, then that kind of makes up the difference. But yeah, I see where you're coming from.
I suppose. I think the problem is with... so I asked them, why only 4 as opposed to 6? And Obsidian was like, you can go back to a previous episode and listen to our interview with the Tyranny development team. I will even link it in the show notes if you want to hear my interview with them. But they were like, well, we wanted something that was easier to manage.
Right. I can understand
because
that too.
6 characters is kind of hard to manage at any given time, which to me doesn't hold a ton of water because you can save it. Or you can just pause it, set up all of your moves,
yeah,
unpause, watch how things are going, pause, move people around, unpause, watch how things are going. It can be a little chaotic, but I sort of feel like 4 characters might limit your options a little too much. So
I'm someone who likes to keep things organized, so I'm actually a little happier with just having 4 versus 6, but I can also see why the lack of options would make someone like you a little more unhappy about it.
I think the problem is, in games like these, you always have to have a tank,
mm-hmm.
and you always have to have a spellcaster.
Right.
And you rarely are in a situation where you can just go without. Like, I think the peak example of this is in Dragon Age, where magic was just uber powerful, the original Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
And you, so really, you already had a minimum of 2 slots accounted for. And there were people like, oh, well, if I was a rogue and I just had like a ton of potions, I could keep my party alive. But that, I mean, that was kind of almost like a challenge. Like, yeah. I was saying, oh, I'm gonna fight against these artificial limitations. I'm just gonna challenge myself and not use a mage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's once again the case in Tyranny. I think mages are once again very powerful, and so are hunters, actually.
Yeah. But,
so in that regard, once again, you have that issue where a couple slots from the party is already accounted for,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, what else can you stick in these last? And maybe you need a healer too, so that's 3 slots.
I need
and
a
it's
healer.
Like, okay. And then it's like, okay, well, I got 1 slot. What do I want to put in there? I guess a rogue, maybe, or a hunter. I don't know.
Puppy dog.
An offensive tank.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I prefer to have 6. I like to have a lot more flexibility.
Yeah,
in my party
I can
building.
Understand that. But
especially because party building is my favorite thing to do in an RPG. It's my absolute favorite thing.
Yeah, see, I think we've had this discussion in the past with me and jobs and stuff like that. I tend to get intimidated a lot more easily. So mm-hmm. I'm okay with just having less options. But at the same time, I understand why other people would be like, no, I want like a party of 6 white mages. And I
Indeed. So, Nadia, are you enjoying Tyranny?
I am. It runs a little slow on my computer, strangely enough, and I have an okay computer. Mm. But I'll definitely be resuming and seeing how far I can get before I just die horribly or whatever fate has planned for me.
I am enjoying Tyranny as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are some smart design decisions going on. I really like how different and interesting it is to get dumped into this system where you are the establishment.
Yes.
You are part of the empire and you can go in a lot of different directions.
That's neat.
I think there are really a lot of intriguing role-playing possibilities in there where you can really go in a lot of different directions, which I think is always a great thing to see in an RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's definitely a lot more streamlined than Pillars of Eternity, and I miss some of the more nuanced systems of Pillars of Eternity, and I prefer the stricter Dungeons and Dragons style.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why they went for a slightly more casual approach, and I don't think it completely compromises things.
Right.
Like, there's still some nice skill trees, and you got your classes and stuff, and like the battles are still reasonably fun, so
yeah.
It doesn't completely compromise the game. I'm just like,
From what I played, even though it's a small bit, it's a well-built game. You can see a lot of work and love went into it.
Yeah, I always trust Obsidian to know what they're
doing.
Yeah,
like
I
just spent
RPG.
All this time just reading the lore and the character information and stuff like that, and that's always fun to do.
Even better, I haven't run into any bugs yet, so I'm
yeah.
sure that will change.
Neither have I.
But I'm kind of wondering if Tyranny will actually get picked up and noticed, because
I
it's been flying under the radar all year. Like, it feels like everybody's been kind of forgetting about it.
Well, we're talking about
it. Oh, we certainly are, but that's because we're the RPG podcast.
That's true.
We try and notice all of the RPGs that are worth talking about. And Tyranny is certainly worth talking about. So we'll revisit a little bit down the line.
Yeah, I'd like to.
After I've had a chance to like really like play it and wrap it up. But so far, so good?
Yeah, so far, so good.
So far, so good. Okay, before we move on to the final subject, let's quickly do a little thought experiment. So one of the conceits of Tyranny is that you're the villain.
Uh-huh.
Like, you're the bad guy. You're the evil empire that all of the characters in Final Fantasy are fighting. And so I decided to have a little fun with this idea and ask, what would other RPGs look like if you were playing as a villain? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here's my first one, Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
Sephiroth in Final Fantasy VII.
Well, he probably just, like, summon the universe to crush whoever annoys him, like someone's in front of him in line and is like, uh-uh, I'm summoning the universe to crush you.
So I'm imagining something almost like Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So instead of being a party-based RPG, you're a single character. Almost like Lightning Returns, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, you know, you can even imagine the battle system where it's like duels with enemy characters.
That'd be cool. Big sword.
And everybody's on your tail. The Shinra are on your tail. The party members from the Avalanche is on your tail. You fight all the way through Shinra and ultimately kill the president. And your whole goal is to cast Meteor and bring it down upon the planet.
Yeah, and you can kill that big-ass snake, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And impale it on a tree trunk.
And as you become more and more powerful, like, your powers stem from, like, the Black Materia and, like, Genova.
Mm-hmm.
Or something.
Or something.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that it would be kind of the anti-hero RPG, right?
Yeah.
Like, and at the end of the game, you are, you know, you're the one winged angel. You're like super powered.
Yeah.
And you have all of these abilities, but you're fighting multiple high level heroes.
Yes. That does sound, that sounds pretty cool. I would play that. No doubt.
I would in fact play that. And I'm surprised Square Enix hasn't already made it.
Well, even if they did make it, they'd probably, like, jam up the story with a whole bunch of compilation of Final Fantasy VII junk.
Because Sephiroth... Is Sephiroth the most popular villain in Final Fantasy?
He is up there, definitely.
I would wager that he is. I don't think he was the best villain.
Mm-hmm.
He had mommy issues.
Just a few.
He was crazy. He was genetically enhanced or something. I don't know. I think Kefka was a much better villain than...
Yeah.
Sephiroth ultimately was.
Yeah.
But I think that his journey would be a compelling game.
It would. Because it stretches across the world, whereas Kefka doesn't really go anywhere. he lives in the Empire, and then he sits in a tower, and that's his journey. So, yeah, I see where you're coming from.
I think that being Kefka could be a great RPG. Here's why. So, first of all, you would have a party. Your party would be like the Imperial soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his story, initial story arc, is him plotting against Emperor Gestal.
That's true.
So you would be simultaneously undermining the Empire, but also working for it.
Right. Okay, that would be kind of interesting.
Working towards your own goals. And it's not quite as clear cut as Final Fantasy VII. But I think that there's space to do some interesting and fun things with that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Okay, yeah, you sold me. I could deal with that. Of course, I'm pro anything Final Fantasy VI, so if Square Enix gave us any sort of supplemental material like they've been doing with Final Fantasy VII for a million years, I'd snap that up.
I kind of want to hear, like, do you have any good RPGs that would be more fun if you were the villain, or at least pretty fun if you were the villain?
Well, there's one thing I can say is, even though Final Fantasy IV The After Years was a bad game, I really like the fact you could play as Golbez. I think he had the only interesting part of that whole story. But as for villains who I like to play as in, like, hypothetical games, when we talked about our favorite RPG villains, I mentioned Luca Blight. And he would be a really, really interesting character to play as. Because, like Kefka, he undermines the whole, his father and the kingdom and everything. And just on top of his scheming, he is just a bloodthirsty monster. And he can use a sword and he can use magic. And he's not afraid to use that sword and that magic. And he has no remorse, no pity, no anything. That he does not care if you are in the way of his goals. He is going to cut you down. And just playing as that ruthless kind of villain, like, you know, sometimes you're just in the mood for that, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the things in Tyranny, is that you can really decide how far you want to be.
Exactly.
Do you want to be kind of a lawful evil, or do you want to be a chaotic evil?
Yeah.
Essentially. Which I think is cool, right?
Yeah.
Or do you want to just, like, go full good and, like, do a full heel face turn and team up with the rebellion?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can do that as well. So I like to imagine that in a hypothetical game where you're Luca Blight, you would you could decide, like, essentially, whoever is controlling Luke of Blight decide to go full chaotic evil.
Yes. Although, it'd be like, it'd be interesting, because, I mean, it's kind of inferred that Luke of Blight, his mind is completely snapped, because he watched his mother get raped repeatedly.
Mm.
So, the game itself never really explores that blatantly, which, okay, that's fine with me, frankly. But the point is...
Yeah, rape as a plot device. Woo!
Yeah. It can be done, but you have to be really careful about it. But the thing is, okay, he obviously has some issues. Can he work through those issues? Can he still see the light, or is he completely gone? You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things maybe you would have to decide.
Hmm, indeed. All right, here's another, like, weird one. And maybe this wouldn't work as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Reapers from Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Where... it becomes almost kind of a simulation RPG. Oh no, here's a good one. All right, are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
So in the original Mass Effect, you are fighting a rogue N7 agent who is trying to bring back the Reapers, or trying to pave the way for the Reapers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been taken over by, I don't know, by them. There's a process.
Right.
Like, he's been mind controlled by them. And I think that would make for sort of an interesting RPG where you're working for these dark forces,
right,
to bring them in, and you are the rogue agent.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Fighting against the establishment.
Yeah.
And you get the evil powers, and your character becomes more and more powerful as they steadily degrade.
Mm-hmm.
Until, I mean, maybe you win, quote unquote, but your character ultimately dies.
Wow, that's dark.
And if you can get, like, characters to help you, that would also be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, no, so I would definitely play that. That would be an interesting kind of twist on the traditional kind of Mass Effect narrative. So, are there any villains in Dragon Quest? I suppose most of the villains in Dragon Quest are these, like, more nebulous characters.
I think four had, or was it six? One of them had this villain that was, like, an elf who had been really wronged by humanity and was really pissed off about it, who was definitely, mm-hmm, had the chance for redemption. But generally, you're talking about, like, all-out evil. Except, you know what? I don't know if you ever finished Dragon Quest Builders, but the Dragon Lord is actually painted as kind of a sympathetic figure in that game.
Oh,
because it is stated several times that he is a savior to the monsters, because, you know, humans go around beating them up all the time. So
yeah,
most of the monsters are okay with him, and they're not all of them. That's another interesting point. But you know, you're being kind of a jerk.
How about being a dragon in Skyrim?
I would be okay with that. I think you should play as Parthenax. That would be a really interesting game.
Oh,
I could deal with that.
No, being a dragon in an RPG would actually be kind of rad, right?
Yeah, we really don't have enough dragon games. I was actually really kind of pissed off when I heard that Lair was supposed to be a Dragonlance game originally.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's fairly recent news that came out, if you want to look it up. But the license was too expensive because Wizards of the Coast had it by then, et cetera, et cetera. So,
okay.
But yeah, it was originally supposed to be a Dragonlance game. And I'm a huge Dragonlance fan, so I was like, aww.
I think the problem with playing as a villain in most RPGs is that they're a part of this, like, monolithic structure.
Mm-hmm.
And they are more of a goal. Like, they don't move from their palace or whatever.
No, they sit on their throne and like it.
That's why characters like, you know, Sephiroth and the main villain from Mass Effect and things like that are kind of interesting, because they are dynamic villains,
mm-hmm,
who aren't just waiting for you to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
They are enacting their own plans.
They're getting stuff
done.
And
I think that's the kind of RPG that I want to play.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. So I think we've cited some pretty interesting examples, though.
Yeah, and if you have any interesting examples of your own, I encourage you to send them in to me, to cat.bailey@usgamer.net, or drop me a PM at cat.bailey on the site, or contact me on Twitter @_catbot, or contact Nadia.
Yes, please.
And tell me, what villain would you want to play in an RPG? And if I get enough interesting responses, I will totally read them on the air.
Woo.
Promise. I know I say that a lot, but this time I'm for speaking for real.
This is for real.
And speaking of reading stuff on the air for realsies, let's do our final segment. It's time for our underrated RPG pitch.
Yay.
And this week's underrated RPG pitch is from Devin Sloan, who says that he's a big fan. He actually sent me two pitches, but I'm only going to read one because I think one of that each one deserves their own kind of, I suppose, time in the sun, as opposed to splitting them up. So here's the first one. The first one is Grandia 2.
Mm-hmm.
Grandia 2 is best remembered for its combat system. Similar to Final Fantasy's ATB system, characters must go through a wait period before you can select their action. Then after more wait time, depending on the action chosen, the character makes their move. So, yeah, you know, the battle system in Grandia 2 is really good. That's the upshot of all this. You can interrupt characters and everything. It's a lot of fun in that regard. There's a lot of... It feels active and dynamic despite being turn-based, and there's a lot of risk reward because if you pick the more powerful spells, you're going to have to wait longer,
mm-hmm.
and that is a problem if you get interrupted.
Right.
He goes, I feel like the story also deserves some credit, though. The dynamic between Alina and Millennia starts off as fairly cliche. Alina is kind of this magical girl,
mm-hmm.
like cute, fairly cliche girl, and Millennia is her evil half.
Mm-hmm.
Almost bordering on offensive in how it portrays two sides of the same girl as either angelic or demonic with no middle ground, but over time, the Ghost game shows its hand and how it's actually subverting those stereotypes. Neither Millennia nor Elena are as black or white as they initially appear. Elena shows herself as dealing with serious regrets and doubts despite putting on the show of being the perfect nun, while Millennia displays more kindness and heart than one would expect from a literal demon who is also trying to bring back the big bad, but I digress. And by the way, I think Millennia would... suppose Millennia is sort of a hero. I don't know. She's part of your team, I suppose.
Conflicted.
In a weird way. Both characters occupying the same body is, in my opinion, a strong critique of how women in anime are so often portrayed as being either the literary virgin or whore. Combine that with several other interesting characters, beautiful artwork, voiced characters. Acting probably doesn't hold up today, but it was cool for the time. I think it was fine. And cool special packs made from one of the best RPGs on the Dreamcast. So happy this one got an HD remake just last year, but I'd love to see a Grandia 4 in the future. Spoiler alert, Grandia 3 wasn't that good.
I'm assuming if he cited 2 and not 3, that's usually an indication that 3 wasn't so good.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, oh, the original Grandia was the best. 2 wasn't as good. I thought 2 was really good. I played it on the Dreamcast. I really enjoyed it back in the day. It was like one of the very, very few RPGs that came out in the U.S. on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, the Dreamcast was kind of lacking. I don't have it on the Dreamcast, but I did buy the HD remake, but I haven't played it just yet.
Yes. I don't know that it holds up super well.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly visually, it hasn't really held up. It looked fine. It looked really good in 1999 or 2000 or whatever it came out. But it now looks kind of like a slightly more visually impressive PlayStation game.
Right.
And it follows a lot of the kind of JRPG cliches of you fighting the evil church, the corrupted church, and all that stuff. And the evil enemy coming back and all that. And the characters aren't super great. Alina and Millennia are easily the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have the main character who is searching for his brother, who is evil now.
That tends to happen.
Yeah, so...
He's gone evil.
My lasting memory of Grandia 2 is how hard the second-to-last boss battle was.
Mm-hmm.
Because, holy crap, that was really hard. Because he would go so fast that interrupting him, you had to really be on the ball,
right?
In how you use your moves, because you had to time out your super moves while also interrupting him at just the right moment.
Right.
And if he got off his super move, woe betide you, because he would dramatically F you up with his really awesome and crazy good super attacks.
Well,
so.
He is one of the final bosses, so you gotta give him that.
I think I was a little underleveled when I fought him.
That could be the case, too.
Yeah, so I was eventually able to beat him. It took a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of close calls, but I do remember that it was like one of those like white knuckle experiences, because you're like sitting there praying that your interrupt will hit just before, like literally a nanosecond before he's going to be using his like Uber attack on you that's going to finish you off.
Mm-hmm.
And you take just a deep sigh of relief as like his little gauge goes all the way back. But then it starts forward again. You're like, damn it.
Just lie down.
I think Grandia 2... Grandia 2 is primarily remembered for its magic system. Or not its magic system, its battle system, and as well it should be, because its battle system was really, really good, even if the story was just okay. Mm-hmm. And Grandia 3 is much the same. I couldn't even finish Grandia 3 because I was so put off by the story.
Right. Well, I'll give it a try, and thank you for the letter.
Thank you so much, Devin, and we'll be getting to the other one pretty soon. I'm surprised that... Did you own a Dreamcast, Nadia?
I got one very late in the game. My husband actually went to the States sometime in 2001 and came back with one, but we only had a couple of games for it.
I see. Okay.
It's in a cupboard.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I got a Dreamcast. I think I bought my Dreamcast like maybe the day after it got canceled.
Aw.
Yeah.
Baby.
Because I just wanted to... Well, I got one the day after it was canceled because I assumed that it would become rare because they were ceasing production.
Yeah.
So... Nope. I was like, I'm going to get one after they like slash prices and everything. And I got like Typing of the Dead. Typing of the Dead was so good.
I never played that. I want to.
My girlfriend and I played Typing of the Dead so much. It was great. And we played Marvel vs. Capcom 2
mm-hmm.
and lots of cool shoot 'em ups. And of course, I got Grandia 2. I loved Crazy Taxi.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a lot of... Oh, of course, Soul Calibur, which is my favorite fighting game of all time. So I really loved my Dreamcast back in the day. And I don't know that it deserves the like almost slobbery love that it gets from nostalgic fans, because I don't think it was a perfect console by any means. I thought it was an amazing fighting game console and a terrific arcade console.
Mm-hmm.
But
definitely. But it had character.
Yeah, people who are like, it was a true gamer's gamer, gamer, gamer console that believed in games with the gaming is kind of annoying, kind of an annoying narrative.
Yeah.
Because PlayStation 2 was a terrific gaming console as well.
Right, of course.
And in fact, it had a much deeper and wider library and had plenty of creativity and interesting games, see Katamari Damacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like the Dreamcast was the last bastion of creativity in video games. Even if it was, and I know that I'm like, whoa, I'm going against the Dreamcast was perfect narrative. I think the Dreamcast was amazing. It's just, its qualities are a tiny bit overstated.
Just a little. And you kind of realize it when you go back to Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2.
Well, Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure were never that good.
That's not what people had back in the day.
I did love that Sega really went all out with the wacky inventiveness, and it was because of Dreamcast that we got games like Rez and stuff like that. And of course, Soul Calibur like essentially killed the arcade port by being a better than arcade perfect port
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. So yeah, I have a lot of my. I do, in fact, have a lot of fond memories of playing my Dreamcast. Don't get me wrong. But if you have more underrated RPG pitches, also send those to cat.bailey@usgamer.net. I will read them on the air. In the meantime, Axe of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, wherever our podcasts are sold. You can find us on all of the social medias. I already mentioned me. It's the_catbot. And Nadia @NadiaOxford. Check out US Gamer on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, the works. We are putting out stuff whenever possible. Nadia, aside from Tiny Girl, Tiny Games, do you have anything to promote?
Let's see. On Tiny Girl, Tiny Games, I wrote a little thing about, like, being in the hospital and playing games at the same time. Like, I kind of recounted the story when I was in the hospital and all they had was Mario was missing. and that was a tragedy.
Oh, no.
Other than that, I wrote about Skyrim, obviously, and I'm actually writing a piece right now that will be up by the time this podcast is up, so it's about Final Fantasy VII, so please read that, too.
Cool. I wrote about, just recently on the site, I wrote about American Daitoryo Senkyo, which is about the time that Japan tried to simulate American elections on the Famicom.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that was a thing that happened. And I also wrote about my trip to the Day of the Devs Indie Showcase in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which I thought was really awesome. I talked a little bit about my BlizzCon reactions. We didn't talk about it on the show, but I think it's really awesome that Diablo is going to be essentially sort of kind of remade in Diablo 3 as a free update. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
That is cool.
And I recently wrote about, well, of course, I wrote about how Exist Archive is in no way, shape, or form a spiritual successor to Valkyrie Profile, which we discussed on last week's episode.
We did.
So go check out all of that on the site. There's lots to cover. In the meantime, yeah, we made it through this episode. Woo! We did it.
We hope we helped you feel
a little
bit better.
We're still here. Yeah, I hope that this was a nice window. And if you're actually happy and, well, good. You got your mood bolstered even further.
There you go.
Yay.
Everybody's a winner.
So, yeah, I'm going to New York. I will be in New York by the time this episode goes up. But we will be back next week for more RPG goodness. We'll be back to talk Pokemon. Sun and Moon. Yeah, there's going to be a lot to cover on that front. It may be the entire episode, maybe. So I guess we will see. But please look forward to that. In the meantime, thanks for listening as always. I've been Cap Bailey, and for Nadia myself, we'll see you again soon. Happy adventuring.